job, get on it.
February 28th, meeting of Labor and Commerce will now come to order. It's 3:05 p.m. In attendance, we have, or present, we have Representative...
Pick me off the sidewalk, Newman.
Try Mark Newman, Representative Jerry Ramirez, Representative Bob Booth, Representative Berta Gardner, and myself, Representative Olson, Chair of Labor and Commerce. We have three bills today. The first bill will be House Bill 77. There's a CS in the file. I'd entertain a motion to adopt version C as the working document. Do I hear a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move House CS for House Bill 77, which is version 25 LS0350 / C.
That's the version we'll use. Representative Curtillo, would you care to join us?
Yes, thank you. I'd like to have my Hannah McCarty come up as well. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Since our last meeting, we've talked pretty extensively with the Department of Public Safety, and I think is Catherine
Monfreda
online, because I know members had a couple questions, and she was going to be. Do we have her online? We don't. Okay, well, we'll just represent for her then, and also to some of the marriage brokers, the internet companies. It's a dating also Ms. McCarty talked to. So I'm going to let her run you through the changes. We did make changes that came up in the last committee and feel pretty positively that the bill's in pretty good shape at this point. But if I might have Ms. McCarty do that for you, tell you the changes to the bill, if you're interested.
Welcome, Anna.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Hannah McCarty. I'm staff to Representative Curtula. And I just wanted to walk through the four changes that we made to the CS. The first change was on the first page, line 11. We added the requirement that the client provide a criminal justice report for not just Alaska, but every state they have resided in since they reached the age of 18. And this ties into a change that we made on page 2, line 22, if I can just skip down to the third item on your changes for the CS memo. There we modified the language. Previously we'd required that the individual get a national criminal history check from the Federal Bureau of Investigations. However, in speaking with Kathy Monfreda from the Department of Public Safety, currently the FBI only provides those reports to government agencies. So that is the reason that on page 1, line 11, we modified the bill to require that they get a criminal justice report from each state they resided in. That way the information will be covered in that manner. The additional two changes we made was on page 2, line 11. We deleted the reference to free legal advice being available in Alaska because currently it is not. And the final change was on page 3, line 11. We deleted the language requiring that traditional matchmakers operate not-for-profit. And this was a result of a conversation we had with Representative Ledoux in the previous committee meeting. She referenced that some of the traditional matchmakers that she knows of do charge a fee. So we decided to delete the language not-for-profit. So those are the changes that we made with the help of Representative Ledoux and also with the help of Department of Public Safety. And hopefully she will be online at some point to answer any questions about the criminal history record checks.
Any questions for Hannah? Representative Gardner?
I do have questions. Can you talk a little bit about how to regulate activity that takes place on the internet? I mean, how would it be enforced? How would it be monitored? How would we as Alaskans have any idea if Alaskans are operating through some Bosnian internet agency?
Through the chair, Representative Gardner, we have thought about this, and while I agree it can be difficult to regulate activities on the internet, we kind of feel that this is a good public policy statement to make. And it's similar to the one that was included in the three-part trafficking bill last year. The portion that was presented by Representative Croft was involving sex tourism, and that bill regulated the advertising that you would be able to do. and they've prohibited it from taking place in Alaska, offering sex tourism packages. So I guess I would use that as an illustration of how we kind of feel this is an important public policy statement to make. And granted, there may be some difficulty in regulating the internet. We want to make this statement. This is how we feel, and this is the information we feel should be provided.
I'd like the I'd like the record to reflect that we've been joined by Representative Ledoux.
And also, what I want to say is this: you know, everything's going to happen on the internet through the chair. It's that's what's going to happen. That's how these things are going to be arranged by and large. So that if we don't try to regulate it, it's probably not going to be regulated. The second thing is that if you have contacts in state, which these companies will, by virtue of having the internet, you know, taking place here in Alaska, they are by law regulated. We can regulate them. So that's the reason we're doing it. And we really do think, by and large, it'll probably be mostly internet driven.
Okay. Representative Newman.
Thank you, Chair. Hannah or Representative Curtula. When we look at, like in your changes, or it's page 1, line 11, I guess, or actually where it asks for a complete criminal justice information report, what happens if the individual was in the military? They could have been stationed overseas. They could have had tours of duty overseas for more than 30 days. What do we do then? And also, do we need to get reports from other governments, from the military? What about the private sector if they're transferred around? How does that work?
Through the chair, it's a good question. We made this change to avoid the issue that we would have if we had an individual trying to get an FBI record, which actually may be not possible. So we turned to the language that other states had, and this is following along the lines of what they did. You could insert, I suppose, a complete criminal justice information report from each state or from and their military record, I suppose, you know, in here. We haven't seen that in any other states nor in the federal language, and it may just be that, you know, that may be a step more difficult than what we've got capability to do in this bill. The federal law may very well apply in that case anyway. That would be my sort of guess, is that the federal law would probably apply.
We do have Ms. Montfori. I'm probably butchering her name, but she is online now if that anybody
follow up.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative, I'm not quite sure I got an answer besides the fact that this is what other states have done. And what would happen if a criminal record was required from somebody who was from other states, was in the military, transferred to other countries? How do they go about getting that information?
Thank you. Through the chair, the federal law, I believe, would apply because the federal government would regulate it at that point. We would regulate only within the states, and that's why we've copied the other states the way we have. But I don't know, maybe Ms. McCarty has another thought about that.
Representative Newman, through the chair, we were focused on making the client responsible for getting their criminal record histories from each state. I am not certain if we had contemplated saying each state and each country you had lived in. I guess that is a possibility to add that requirement so that it would not only be each state that they resided in, but also each country outside of the United States they resided in as well. We could potentially add that requirement. I'm not sure if that's level that we want to go to complicate things, but it is definitely a good idea.
And if I may, Mr. Chair. And Representative, that's a real hang-up that I've had on this since I first read it is, again, you know, you said, well, maybe they would follow federal law, but I have no idea what federal law is or how that entails. But I see that as something that is very viable, particularly in a state like Alaska where we have a lot of military personnel. And if they wanted to, you know, purchase or however they, you know, get a wife.
Through the chair,
It's a good point. Our problem is that the information services that we have available to us, and maybe Ms. Monfreda can even speak to this, are somewhat limited at this point. We can easily require these individuals, or at least we think fairly easily, require them to go to states and get their information. We don't think, get it from the FBI. So requiring someone to come forward with a foreign record is probably not going to be very enforceable. It's also, in my opinion, I think that if you've got someone in the military, I think the military is going to be regulating that. So my hope is that the committee would accept that this is a good starting place, that I'm certainly absolutely willing to talk with the military and to also talk with public safety about what they think about getting foreign records between this committee and the next. But I would hate to see us say we don't want to see this simply because you're not going broad enough, when really we're taking a pretty big first step. Thank you.
Representative Ramirez.
Hi, thank you. Representative Cotulla, it's so nice to see you.
Thank you.
I see that we have the lobbyist here for Match.com, and I was wondering if we could hear from that individual to answer a few of these questions after your testimony is over. It would be very helpful.
That would be great. Thank you.
Representative Gardner.
Thank you. Just a question on page 3, line 6, or actually 5 and 6, the person who violates the requirements of this section subject to a civil penalty not to exceed $20,000 for each violation. The person who violates is the marriage broker, not the client. Is that correct? That's who that refers to?
That's right. Thank you.
And if that person's out of the country, the collection is kind of a challenge. But if they're in the U.S., can the state of Alaska collect in another state from somebody who's operating, say, out of Los Angeles?
Through the chair, it would depend on how many contacts and on how the Department of Law felt they could enforce it. And they might be able to. It'd depend on where they were registered and where they had a place of business. So that would probably be the best place to be suing them. Thank you.
Representative Ledoux.
Are most of these brokers within the United States or outside of the United States?
Through the chair, most of the ones that I've seen online are, they say that they're U.S. companies.
Thank you.
Does anybody have any questions for Kathy Monfreda from Public Safety? Representative Gardner?
Well, I'm not sure if they're for Ms. Monfreda or actually for the bill sponsor, but if I were a person who was participating in this as a client and I was told I had to get my criminal history, I wouldn't know where to start. I mean, so surely the marriage broker could provide documentation and tell me where to go. But I, you know, suppose I've lived in 6 different states. I mean, how do I know even who to contact where?
Representative Gardner, through the chair, this is Kathy Monfreda calling from Public Safety. On our Public Safety website, we provide a link to other state central repositories so that they can go directly to each state and follow the procedures from that state to obtain their criminal history record.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Representative Liddell.
So how would this work if somebody had, for example, a violent felony, but they were a juvenile when they had the violent felony?
Through the chair, we have exempted juvenile records because we did it after 18 years of age. So we wouldn't be getting it. Thank you.
Follow up?
Follow.
You don't think that it's relevant that somebody might have murdered their girlfriend at 17 and a half?
Well, through the chair, if they're tried as an adult, the likelihood is that they would have some kind of a adult record, but if it were clearly just a juvenile act and it were a sealed record, no, you're right, we wouldn't have access to it. I guess I'd turn that to Ms. Monfreda too, but I think I'm correct on that.
Through the chair, that's correct. Even public safety doesn't have access to juvenile records. So we wouldn't necessarily know about it. That might be covered in the self-disclosure portion of the application, though.
Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. We don't have anybody else online. Do we have anybody else in the room that would care to testify on this bill?
I think that, through the chair, I think that Representative Rammers had asked if Mr. Noss, I think, is in the room, and we have
He's not in the room.
He ducked. All right.
He looked on the way out that he was shaking his head.
For the record, we have worked with him, and I think that Ms. McCarty spoke with him today about his clients and their feeling about the legislation, and I think we've satisfied him.
He, for the record, Hannah McCarty again, through the chair, Representative Rammers, I did speak with Chris Noss, and he had not received any corrections or changes from his clients today regarding the bill.
Hannah, through the chair, Mr. Chair, I know we're all mindful of the clock, but wouldn't it be more interesting if we had him here? Yeah. Special pleasure for those of us who have worked with him as a member, a past member of the executive branch.
Through the chair, we'll make every effort to have him present at the next committee.
At the next committee,
he would be invited.
He indicated on his way out. He didn't feel a need to talk. Thank you very much. I'll bring it back to the committee at this point in time. What are the wishes of the committee? Representative Ledoux.
I'll move CS for House Bill number 77, 25 LS0350C with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Is there any opposition? Bill goes on to finance. Thank you very much. Nice we'll job. Take a brief at ease while we sign the paperwork. The next bill before us is House Bill 14, and with us is Representative Crawford. I'll entertain a motion to move version L, I think is the most recent version, isn't it, for the working duck?
It is, yes.
Mr. Chair, I move CS for House Bill 14, version 25LS0095/L.
You got our undivided attention, Representative Crawford.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I really appreciate the privilege of coming before you.
I can appreciate the amount of work that you put into this and the various versions, but looks like a keeper.
Mr. Chairman, you know, we've looked at this a number of times. Everybody here but Representative Book has had a chance to look at this bill. And everybody here has actually voted for it, with the exception of Representative Booth. And I can say a few of the things that I've said before, that what we're doing around alcohol is not working. And the reason I brought this bill forward is because I would like to focus on prevention rather than just on punishment. I mean, I realize that there are a lot of things that we can do based on punishment to work as a deterrent. But this is a way that we can get or keep alcohol out of the hands of people that have already proven that they can't handle alcohol. So this is an approach. We put an incentive in it for the vendors. Rather than having it as a mandatory ID check, it's a $1,000 incentive if they catch people that are violating their court orders. This just identifies the people that are already ordered by the courts not to buy, consume, or enter the premises. What we did differently also was that for people that want to go into a restaurant that serves alcohol, we put in here that it was only to restrict them from buying or consuming alcohol. They can go in and have a meal, and they're not going to come under this provision. So I'd be glad to answer questions from here on.
Well, I think I'll start off. I just want it really clear. for me. I take my wife out to dinner. I order a bottle of wine. I get asked for my driver's license. I say, no, thank you. Will they still get me the bottle of wine?
They don't have to. They can refuse to serve you the bottle of wine if you refuse to show your license or state ID. But they don't have to ask you for it. That's the non-mandatory part.
Representative Ledoux.
Can't they right now, if they choose to ask somebody for their ID, they're not required to ask somebody for their ID, but can't they now simply refuse to serve you if they choose to ask you for your ID and you choose not to provide it?
Absolutely. That's the law. And right now, what they might find by asking for a license is whether you're underage or not. What I want to do is put it on the license so that they would also know that they are a repeat alcohol offender and they're not eligible to buy alcohol for that reason, not just for those people that are under 21.
Representative Ramirez.
Thank you. Just for the record, we just a couple of weeks ago at Pike's Landing, troopers came into our facility, carded everybody, and I mean everybody in the establishment. So they already have the right to do that, including, you know, adults have reached majority, the age of majority, some considerable period ago. Mm-hmm. That's a right that the DPS already enjoys.
Representative Newman and then Gardner.
Thank you, Chair. And Harry, you and I have talked on this bill several times, one-on-one in your office, one-on-one in my office, and I really tried to understand this bill.
Okay.
But as a member of this committee, you know, I guess that's my job, but when I look at some of the CSs, or what is, for version L, what we've been told some of the changes are, it's the language seems to be in here that you know there's some parts in here that says it's different than when we first talked. You know, I had asked some of these questions and you said that was already included in the original bill, but now I see in the CS that maybe there was some changes in that language or for one reason or another. I guess my question is, why did you do the changes that you have in the CS? Why did you change those compared to what was originally in there?
Through the chair, Representative Newman, the reason why we put these in there was just so that it would be reiterated, spelled out very clearly that the vendor has no duty to check the driver's license and that they have no, because they have no obligation, they have no liability because of that. It's just wanted to, you know, we kept hearing that there would be some liability there. So we wanted to spell it out in numerous places that there would be no liability so that nobody could have any possible question about the liability aspect.
If I may have a couple follow of questions. Yeah, and the reason that I ask questions like that, Harry, is when we look in Section 1, where it says that they're now not required to physically check the identification of every premises. It was my understanding that that was already in the first version.
It was.
And, you know, because when I talked to you, but then when I see we have changes that explain this, you can see how it could possibly leave a little, there was some, I'm telling you, there was some doubt in my mind as I thought it was in the first version, but now you're telling me
it was.
It's in the second version.
It's in the first version and the second version. And
but you created a CS to,
We just wanted to make sure that everybody could see it as plain as black and white, that there was no duty to check that license. We weren't letting people go back to, you know, other sections of the law. If we just made it very, very clear so that, you know, it couldn't be disputed.
Representative Gardner.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. My question related to Representative Ramirez's comments earlier, but they're not related to this bill, so I'll just ask him outside.
Representative Ledoux.
I didn't have a question right
now. Ramirez and then Newman.
Representative Crawford. You've worked hard on this bill, and I thank you for it. Heather, you've done an exceptional job. Very, very, very impressed with the work and the original thought, and beating with all due respect on Jerry to help him innovate something that satisfies a breadth of concerns that I know the committee's expressed and I have expressed, both as a licensee and in a broader context, a representative of the hospitality industry, food and beverage industry. I think it's a good bill, and I'm going to be happy to support you in this effort. I do have just a couple of questions. I'm pleased to make just a couple of remarks first. I'm pleased that you are so emphatic and, in fact, redundant in protecting licensees from being hurt or their representatives, the retail clerks, the servers, the bartenders, the licensees themselves. I appreciate that, and I appreciate the redundancy in the bill. The question I have for you, I asked Heather about earlier, is this references two statutes, 030 and 032, which are a DUI statute, and also the refusal statute. And I wanted to know, I don't want to prevent this bill from moving, but I would be delighted if you would consider expanding the language as it moves to the next committee of referral to consider a condition of sentence, probation, or parole for other people, domestic violence, sex offenders, and people with a violent history who the court has specifically prohibited them from having alcohol. If without adding a significant fiscal note, because sometimes DMV is hemmed in by their own limitations of their system, if that's something that can be incorporated. But, I applaud you. It's been a pleasure to work with you on this. It's been an excellent effort in bipartisanship, and I just thank you both for really meeting the needs of some of the interest groups.
Before us right now, we're down to the last bill of the day, House Bill 35. Representative Kawasaki, welcome to Labor and Commerce. I believe it's your first time here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
The floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
But I'll entertain a motion to adopt the bill, the original bill.
Mr. Speaker, or Mr. Chair, I'd like to adopt for consideration for the committee version House Bill 35 version 25 LS0214/A for committee referral or committee to look at consideration.
Move to adopt.
That's the word.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for the opportunity to address you and introduce House Bill 35. House Bill 35 is a simple bill. That was for you.
Wrong thing.
We got three more days.
45 minutes. House Bill number 35 extends the Board of Certified Direct Entry Midwives. It extends it to the date 2015 as per the legislative budget and audit. The purpose of the board basically is to protect the health and the safety of the public by identifying individuals who are willing to pursue the training and meet the qualifications necessary to become a licensed midwife. Board's currently composed of five members, two midwives, two nurse midwives, and a physician licensed by the state medical board. Just to wrap it up, there are several other people that can talk about the audit. The audit looked like a fairly clean audit. Request that this also be passed. Didn't offer any significant substantive changes. the fiscal note that is also attached is a Senate version of the fiscal note, which I don't think that we got a copy yet from this committee. It has a $22,000 fiscal note, and the entire portion is paid for by the 36 midwives and apprentice midwives across the state.
Are there two boards of midwives? Are the direct entry and regular, or just direct entry covers all midwives?
Well, and there are people up here that know a little bit more about midwifery. If you'd like to, that's all I've got for your consideration today, and I can pass it on to the next speaker if you like, sir.
And it looks like, do I have any questions for Representative Kawasaki? So I guess we've got Kay Connie. Connie, please join us. Please state your name and affiliation for the record, and then answer the question of the day.
My name is Kay Connie. I'm a certified direct entry midwife in the state of Alaska. I've been licensed since we had our board created in 1992, and I'm the executive director of the Juneau Family Birth Center here in Juneau. I'm also representing the Midwives Association of Alaska here today. Before I start reading my testimony, I just want to say that there are two kind of midwives in the United States. There's direct entry midwives, which in many states are called licensed midwives. In this state, we're called certified direct entry midwives because of a discussion in a committee many, many years ago. So in this state, nurse midwives are licensed by the nursing board, and direct entry midwives are licensed by the certified direct entry midwifery licensing board. So there are two kinds of midwives, and those are the two boards that license them. Thanks for giving me an opportunity to testify at your committee. I'm asking that you support the House Bill 35. Obviously, I think it's a really good idea to extend the licensing board. I sat on the Certified Midwives Licensing Board from its inception in 1992 until 2000, until I had served two terms. I worked really hard with the legislature in 1992 to create this board. I think the legislature did an excellent job in setting midwifery standards in the state of Alaska. And we have a law that many other states look to when they're crafting their laws for direct entry midwives in their states. The board's done an excellent job of writing and implementing regulations for the state of Alaska. They continue to keep the regulations up to date with current standard of practice. And the board continues to strive for the highest standards for CDMs. And as a result, midwives in Alaska are professional, well-trained, and provide safe, excellent care for women and families. Certified direct entry midwives deliver about 10% of the babies in this state. Compare that with down south, about 5% of babies are attended by midwives out of hospital. Training standards are really high. Certified direct entry midwife students are required to attend twice as many births as a certified nurse midwife. I think that's really important to have that little piece of information. And I would just say let's continue the excellent work we've been doing by continuing the Certified Direct Entry Licensing Board until 2015. I'm available for questions.
Representative Gatto and then Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm a little curious about the nursing, certified nursing midwives. Are they already a certified nurse who then take on an additional position of also being a nursing midwife? Now, their training, according to what your testimony was they need to attend only half the number of births, but in actuality, during the nursing training, have they already attended
some? Not necessarily. Certified direct entry midwives need to attend 60 births in order to obtain their license. This takes anywhere from 2 to 4 years, and 10 of those births are observations, 20 are assisting, and 30 are in a primary role under the supervision of another midwife. We have an apprenticeship model for our training. We also have colleges. For instance, I'm a preceptor with the National College of Midwifery, and my students can earn an associate's degree in midwifery. And they can go on and get their bachelor's, but the associate's level is the licensing level. A nurse midwife is somebody who's a nurse first, an RN first, and then goes on to take maybe a year of training to get their master's in nursing in nurse midwifery. Depending on the kind of nurse they were, they might not have attended a birth in the past. If they were an OB nurse, then maybe they've attended births as an OB nurse as an assistant, but never in a primary role. In order to graduate nurse midwifery school, my understanding is, and I think I'm pretty accurate on this as I have two nurse midwives working for me at the Juneau Family Birth Center, that they have to have attended 25 births only to get their license in most states.
Paula?
Thanks again, Mr. Chair. I did have a child that was had a midwife, and but there was a doctor there at the same time. Mm-hmm. Don't ask me. I don't remember the circumstances, but it was a bad situation with the cord, the blue color, the flaccid, all of those things. What is the record? And I know this has nothing to do with the bill extension, but I'm curious because it's the rare opportunity we have to discover things. Mm-hmm. Right. What is the record of midwifery nurses or anybody who's assisting as a midwife relative to the record of doing it in a hospital, knowing that the hospital always takes the ones that are thought to be dangerous and the midwives never take any that mm-hmm. are thought to be dangerous? Can you elaborate at all on successes and failures?
I don't know how much time you would like me to spend on this through the chair, but I could point out that there's been several studies. One was recent through the Midwives Alliance of North America did a study on out-of-hospital birth compared to hospital birth and safety, and found that out-of-hospital birth attended by a qualified midwife was just as safe, if not safer, than hospital birth. The other thing I can tell you about our training is that we are trained to deal with emergencies such as, you know, problems with cord or whatever, and that's why you do need a trained and qualified midwife at your birth, somebody who's trained to deal with emergencies. Our C-section rate at the Juneau Family Birth Center is 8%. 12 to 15% of the women who start there end up being transported to the hospital, and of all the women who start with us, 8%, we have an 8% C-section rate. The C-section in Juneau altogether 2 years ago was 43%. And we achieved this with really good outcomes. So,
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Chair. Ms. Kane?
Connie.
I was curious as to, I see this affecting more rural Alaska because of the lack of medical facilities and doctors that we have in Alaska. Can you give us any idea of maybe the ratio of babies born with a midwife in urban and rural settings as compared to traditional doctor?
Representative Newman, through the chair. I would say that most of the certified directory midwives practice in the urban areas in Juneau, Anchorage, Wasilla, and Fairbanks. There are some certified directory midwives I know that do practice rurally, but probably the percentage is much smaller. Most of us prefer to practice near a hospital.
I find that curious. Mm-hmm. You know, it was the opposite of what I would have thought, mm-hmm. Because of the lack of doctors in rural Alaska. Mm-hmm. So a woman from rural Alaska, what are their choices to try and come to an urban setting where there's a hospital like that before they have a baby, I guess?
Yeah, I'd really love to see midwives in every rural community providing really excellent prenatal care. But I do think that most women do come into the cities where there are hospitals to have their babies. We get women from Haines and Hoonah and Skagway and all over Southeast that come to Juneau to stay and have their babies either at the birth center or at the hospital.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Gardner.
Thank you. Can you tell me if direct entry midwives or indeed nursewood midwives in Alaska do any home births?
Through the chair, Representative Gardner, I believe that most certified directory midwives attend home births versus birth center births. There's several of us that have birth centers, and we also attend home births, but I would say the majority are home births. Nurse midwives, on the other hand, probably attend work in hospitals and a few in birth centers.
Thank you.
Representative Gatto.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. It's not being funny. What percentage of midwives are husbands or men?
Through the chair, Representative Gatto, at this time we have no male midwives in the state that I know of.
Any further questions for Ms. Connie? Thank you very much.
Thank you. I do have written testimony.
We have Pat Davidson with us for questions only, and if nobody has any questions for Pat, we won't drag her up here.
I kind of wanted to ask her.
Okay.
I like her.
Thought we'd let you off light, Pat.
Mr. Chair, I like her too.
Okay. I like her too.
So we could be here a long time. You performed the audit, and in the audit you recommended the extension to the year 2015. Is 2015 pretty far out, or is that fairly typical for this organization or any organization?
For the record, my name is Pat Davidson, representing the Division of Legislative Audit. Through the Chair, Representative Gatto, a couple years ago, the statute was changed with regard to sunset extension dates. They had been not to exceed 4 years, and that was changed to not to exceed 8 years. When we do the audit, we consider the operations of the, you know, if I'm up here talking about the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board, I'll have a different answer for you. But as it relates to this one, what we found was that it was operating sufficiently. We saw that some issues had come up. We saw that the board had dealt with them. One of the things that we keep an eye on with this board is its financial activity. Due to the small number of licensees, the fees are very high. Right now, for a two-year period, they're over $2,000. And even across the occupations that the state deals with, that is a very high rate. However, they had created a deficit, the fees were raised, and they continue on. So when we looked at that operations, what we saw was the board was competently dealing with the issues that were coming before it, and therefore we saw no reason to recommend anything less than the eight-year extension.
Good follow-up. That was financial, and that, to me, that was the first half. The other half is, do you, as an auditor, look into any of the medical aspects as far as appropriate or not appropriate?
Through the Chair, Representative Gatto, what we do is we look to see how the board is dealing in medical issues. What you're probably more likely to see us get into are investigations. When things have gone wrong, when complaints come in, are the investigations being done timely? Is the board responding to those investigations appropriately? And what we found was the investigations were being done timely. There was one that was kept open for a while. However, there just wasn't enough evidence to really move forward with it. The board was functioning with those issues. We also saw them in trying to change regulations, trying to deal with their own statute, that they were moving forward.
And just lastly, when we give an eight-year extension, that doesn't prohibit us from bringing them back in a shorter time if we feel we just want to.
Through the Chair, Representative Gatto, the legislature at any point in time could pass a new law that shortens the date. They could also ask through the Budget and Audit Committee to have a reevaluation or another audit done on any entity within state government.
Representative Ledoux and then Representative Newman.
My apologies if this question has already been answered, but is there a board for nurse midwives also?
Through the Chair, Representative Ledoux, I believe those are taken care of by the Board of Nursing.
Thank you.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. At this time, in consideration of what this body has historically done as far as extending the dates, and this is something that I have talked to the sponsor about, I'd like to offer an amendment to House Bill 35, that being on line 6, page 1, change the date from 2015.
What did we bring back to committee? We're still taking testimony.
Okay.
Representative Gatto?
I actually have a question for the sponsor or for Ms. Connie. I think Ms. Connie might answer it better. It's not a hard question. You've experienced it, I'm sure. But in the event of a death, stillborn or whatever, where the death had already occurred, do you still stay involved in the birth process and deliver the stillborn and the placenta? Or when there's a death, is that an automatic referral away? And I know it's not the extension date on the bill, but this is the only moments I have to discover how mm-hmm. these things are handled, because there's some other legislation pending. I would like the answers for this, mm-hmm. too.
Through the chair, Representative Gatto, I have been a midwife for 28 years. And so I have personally attended 2 stillbirths. That's a very low number. If we knew that the baby had passed away before the birth, we would not be out of the hospital with that situation. But the 2 stillbirths that I attended, the babies, there was no indication that those babies would be born stillbirth. They were born with a heartbeat, and they just never took that first breath, even with, and we are trained in neonatal resuscitation. We take the same classes that the physicians and the nurses take at the hospital, only it's geared more towards out-of-hospital birth, so they're even better for us. So we do know how to do neonatal resuscitation. We do that. We would, you know, call the ambulance immediately and transport accordingly, and which is what I did in both cases. But there is no... Anywhere in the world, there is no place where there is what we call a zero infant mortality rate. The infant mortality rate in this country is higher than most other industrialized countries in the world. And I do, and since I am in front of the microphone, I'm going to get on my soapbox a little bit and say that in Holland, where midwives attend 75% of the births, 40% of the births are born out of the hospital, their infant mortality rate is lower than any place else in the world. So I just want to put that out there, and that midwives, the infant mortality rate of births attended by midwives are much lower than in the hospital.
So. And I have a follow-up then, mm-hmm. if I may. Is that because in Holland, prenatal care is required? Is it more of a socialist arrangement where if you're pregnant, you have to come in, or we come and get you?
Through the chair, Representative Gatto, it's prenatal care is provided by the midwives, which is different. When a woman is pregnant in Holland, she goes to see the midwife first and only sees a physician if the midwife refers her out because she is high risk. So the prenatal care is midwifery prenatal care and not medical model prenatal care. There's a big difference.
Could we do that?
I would love to see that.
I mean, we're talking about enormous HES mm-hmm. budgets. And mm-hmm. if it results in a mm-hmm. better mortality mm-hmm. rate, and I don't know where the lose part of this situation would be, mm-hmm. but I do appreciate your testimony.
Thank you.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Chair. Ms. Connie, can you give us an idea of cost differences of what a typical mm-hmm. costs are in hospitals compared to an at-home with a midwife?
I can only talk about, through the chair.
Or even in your center?
I can only talk about our center, and we have had to raise our prices over the years, but it is much, much less to have your baby outside of the hospital than in the hospital. In Juneau, it costs, depending on who the payer is, whether it's self-pay or when we apply the sliding scale across the board, so depending on that, it can be anywhere from $5,000 to $10,000 to have complete care at the Juneau Family Birth Center. In the hospital, it's going to be $15,000 or more. So.
Considerable.
Mm-hmm. Big difference. But most people don't come to us because of the cost difference.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any further questions? We also have Dana Brown online for questions only with the Board of Midwives. Anybody have any questions for Ms. Brown? Well, thank you, Ms. Brown, for putting up with us. No, maybe she gave up on us.
I'm here.
Oh.
You're very welcome. I've been listening. This is Dana.
Oh, well, thanks again for being there.
Yes, thank you for hearing it out about our bill.
And do we have anybody in the audience that would care to contribute at this point in time? Then at that point in time, we'll bring it back to the committee, and I believe there's a friendly amendment in the offing.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd just like to offer, again, an amendment that I did talk to the sponsor about, and that would be amending line 6, page 1, line 6, the date 2015 to 2013, which puts it out 6 years. I think this fits in line with more of extension and sunset dates that we typically use in this body for multiple reasons, but I offer that amendment.
Object.
Roll call, please.
Representative Newman?
Yes.
Representative Gatto?
No.
Representative Gardner?
No.
Representative
No.
Representative Rambis?
Yes.
Representative Ledoux?
No.
Representative Olson?
Yes.
Three yeas, four nays.
Well, it brings it back to the committee. If there's no further comments, I believe we have somebody who wants to make a motion.
Yes, Mr. Chair. As a woman who's had a conventional hospital doctor birth, a nurse midwife in a birth center birth, and a nurse midwife, I mean a lay midwife at home birth, it's my pleasure to move and support lay midwifery and to move House Bill 25.LS0214A with attached fiscal notes.
35. House Bill 35.
I'm sorry. Yeah, there's a typo on my paper, actually. With attached fiscal notes and any individual recommendations.
Is there any opposition? It's on to the next committee. And with that, we'll adjourn at 4:35.